Sure, promise that wasn't a beer.
We're in the middle of a pandemic. No one would judge.
Yeah, it's true.
We've got a good number already today, don't we? It's bank holiday, after all.
Okay. Hello and welcome to the Mac Show. We have a pretty cool panel today, and we have a little bit of a different host, I want to say. I've changed. No. Ewan couldn't make it. Ewan couldn't make it. He had some internet troubles, so I jumped in. I'm going to take over hosting duties for today. Will not be as fancy, but we'll we'll make it somehow. I have with me, I think this might be an all-star panel. I mean, just looking at it, like it's my dream team. So first things first, we have Chuck Joyner. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Patrice. How are you?
Doing very well. Crazy week you for look you? Good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The last few weeks have been very crazy, but you look good in the hosting chair.
Oh, thank you. Well, I've been doing this for a while, so it's not the first time. Will not be last time. Yeah, crazy. I'm guessing U.S. is still pandemic central right now.
Yeah, there are some things that are starting to open up depending on where you are in the U.S. Where I am, you know, we have very, very, very limited openings, and they're doing some kind of crazy red, green, yellow designation as to which counties can open up. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that means people that are in a red county, you know, and they find out that there's a yellow county beside them, they go over to the yellow county, which makes no sense at all. So it's just going to be a painful reopening.
Yeah, I think the whole world is kind of feeling the same thing. It's not going to be easy, but I guess we're going to make it somehow, right?
Yeah, yes. We'll get there. We'll get there.
All right, next to him, we have Mr. Inatko. Andy, hi.
How's it going? Hello. Moderately neato, hanging in and hanging on. They've started to roll out gentle reopenings. Mm-hmm. Where I am too, the diner right up the street that's usually got a very, very nice, like, 3/4 mile, 1 mile walk. Mm-hmm. For breakfast, they used to do like Sunday breakfast maybe a couple of times a month, usually try to do it once, because the breakfast that they do are very much worth a 3 mile walk, and it'll help to burn off the 3,000 to 4,000 calories you will definitely consume at this diner. Mm-hmm. So now they're doing breakfast as takeout. Uh-huh. Which is a good thing, because any breakfast they do on any level is excellent. However, it means that I really have to drive the mile, because the thing with pancakes is that you don't want to have them like sitting for like by the time they've been like in my backpack for 20 minutes during a walk. I mean, they're still going to be great. They're going to be great, but they're going to be less. Yeah. So now I'm just contemplating these. I recognize that I walked a whole mile up there and I walked a whole mile back. That countersets like 3 blueberry pancakes with syrup and whipped cream. I realized that I've been living a lie, but it was a beautiful, beautiful lie. But now you've even taken away the lie. Aww. Of I'm getting out some exercise to make this a walk. But yeah, they are darn good pancakes, you know. So
I'm guessing, like, after everything being closed for a couple of weeks, there are probably long lines, right?
Yeah, that's too. I haven't been up there yet. They just started redoing breakfast like a few days ago. I just found out. But there's a personal side to this issue for me, because my state's governor shut down restaurants like on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And like starting like a week and a half before things were like officially shut down, I started my own. Okay, well, look, I shouldn't really go out to like into restaurants and public transportation if I don't have to, because we don't know the parameters of this yet. Mm-hmm. And it really stung, because I specifically remembered 2 days before the order to shut down restaurants happened, like Sunday, I thought, you know what? I haven't had that really good breakfast that I usually have like once a month. I haven't had that in like weeks, and I should just go out and just, you know, it's going to be a risk, but it'll be worth it. And it was still a good idea not to go out. I appreciate that. But the human brain is a very weird and squishy thing. It says, oh, man, for the past couple of months, you could have had like one great breakfast. And they had like, I think they had the brownie pancakes, you know, for as the special this month. And, oh, man, because as I'm like nibbling on my like dry toast and raspberry tea for breakfast, like this could have been like pancakes with walnuts. And, oh, man.
Oh, this is so true.
That said, I am not storming my state house with an arm with a gun. Oh. Okay, I'm not doing that. I'm not strapping a big old gun across my chest, going into the state house and saying I'm a patriotic American and that's why I'm doing this. No.
Well, at least that's something. Next to him, we have Callum. How's Iron Max doing?
Not too bad. We're hoping we're going to reopen on Monday, all being well. So, we are waiting with bated breath for what our Prime Minister is going to say. So he's setting out a roadmap on Sunday with how we're going to come out of lockdown as a country. So we're going to wait and see what he says. But fingers crossed we'll be back open on Monday, able to fix people's things again, which is good for us and good for you as well, hopefully too. So,
yeah, I guess so. It's definitely
crossed,
yeah. I'm betting people are going to be very happy because they have broken devices and they have nowhere to go right now.
And we're going to be very, very happy to fix them, definitely.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Next to him, we have the man, the mystery, the man from Boulder, Jeff Gamet.
Well, since everyone has been sharing their isolation stories, our mountain lions are still doing well and roaming the neighborhoods. We now have bears that are waking up, and so we need to watch for those as well. The raccoons are just as ornery as ever. So anyhow, if you can't find your cat or your small dog, there's a reason for that. And it's because Boulder has become a buffet.
Yeah.
and today we're waiting to hear what the city and county are going to do for phased reopening. Mm-hmm. Right now, Colorado is in a chaotic state where the governor has started reopening some things and cities and counties are doing different restrictions. And there's even one county that said, yeah, we think this whole thing is a load of crap. So everything's open.
Yeah, that's not going to work out.
There's always one.
Yeah.
Yep. So stay out of Weld County.
Okay. Good to know. If you're in the area, stay away. Last but not least, we have the man who gets up at 5 a.m. every Friday to join us on the show. And it looks like he's drinking a beer right now.
No, it's a bubbly.
Oh, it's a
bubbly. It's sparkling water. Not sponsored, by the way, but you know, Pepsi, if you're not doing anything, we can use the loot. Anyway, I'm doing rather well, all things considered. The funny part for my week has been Tuesday, I had to listen to Jeff's seminar. I wanted to, but I was also fixing my dad's car battery at the exact same time. So I listened to an entire Jeff Gamet webinar while I was like half body into the hood of a small Audi TT trying to change the battery. It was kind of hilarious. And I was like, I want to ask Jeff a question, but I can't touch my phone. So I got to listen to it all over again. But anyway, it was really good. If you want to know some cool stuff that even I, as smart as I am, didn't know about Test Expander, like some of the wicked date math it does, you got to listen to Jeff Gamet more than you probably want to, but man, it's pretty good. it's really good. And then the other thing I wanted to point out is catching your seasonal allergies during the pandemic is kind of a freak show. I'm like, this morning, yeah. I woke up, and that's what took me so long. I was like, uh-oh. I'm feeling a little verklempt. That doesn't feel right. Oh, God. Oh, here he comes. And then I, you know, check the temperature. I'm perfectly fine. It's just seasonal allergies.
So worst thing in the world. Walking around a supermarket and you're sneezing everywhere, and it's like, it's just hay fever.
Everyone's looking at you like, get this guy out of here. So I had to bring out the old trusty asthma lover. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's funny because I'm like, now I was already staying in the house, but definitely only want to go grocery shopping right now because of all the looks I'm going to get. So I'll try to sneak in during the senior citizen hour and just, you know, let the gray do its thing.
That's a good plan because I think you could probably physically take the senior citizens.
Oh, most man, Myrtle.
If they give you any guff, you know.
Yeah, I was like, listen, Myrtle, you better back up, lady. you're not ready for this.
you brought your son in to help you with the hello. I meant no allergies. You see, I'm a bit of a Poindexter. I didn't bring my inhaler.
Well, what would be funny is she'll be like, you're the one with the surgically replaced knee, son, so bring it.
Yeah, the week in tech, there has been not too much happening, but I think there's one large elephant in the room that we should talk about, and that is the new 13-inch MacBook Pro that Apple just launched a couple of days ago, I think. Or was it like yesterday, something like that?
A couple days ago.
Yeah. So did you guys have a chance to like read up on it and like know what's new about it?
Yeah, yep. The one thing that stood out to me is the people that were freaking out because of, you know, the minor spec bump on the low side and the ridiculous spec bump on the high side. And I'm like, you know, that's what it's for, right? Like, it's the point of it is to keep them separated. And with just being the Air and the MacBook itself, you know, still yet being somewhat of a different device, I mean, most people in the light pro category, all they really needed was the four ports, you know, extra, and, you know, a little bit better battery life and, you know, the other minor spec bumps that come up with it. But the one that's highly bumped up, it's pretty wicked, you know, for a 13 inch. And I don't know why people freak out when Apple does that. Like, it's not really them too either, right? Because, you know, this is still maybe the last Intel chips that they get.
We'll
but,
see about that.
You know,
yeah,
they can only make with what Intel has made for them, which is probably the reason why they're trying to get to their own swag, right? So they don't have to be dependent on what Intel does. So I just, like, no matter what Apple does, left, right, or indifferent, they're trying to get us. It's irritating.
Yeah. Well, the biggest personal assault on every one of us.
Yeah. Doc, I like what you said about a light professional. I think that's a really interesting term because the other thing, of course, that this did is it gets rid of the old keyboard.
Yes.
And that's the other big
issue. That's a big bump, right?
Yeah, that's a big bump. So, you know, the idea of being able to move into that light professional category, get the four ports, get the new keyboard. And as you said, the associated spec bumps are, it's a win.
Yeah,
it's a big reason why I haven't brought an older one because of the keyboard. I mean, it's something we see day in, day out, the older keyboards, and that they are an absolute nightmare. So, happy that they've gone and done that, to be fair.
Yeah, it comes with the new 10th generation processors, at least on the higher end specs. I think the lower end is still the 8th gen, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think so.
And that one goes up to 7, i7, whereas the bigger one goes up to i9.
Yeah. Mm. What was really interesting for me was that they kept the design. There was this whole rumor going around that there might be a like 14-inch-ish redesign, kind of what they did with the 15 to 16-inch change. But no, they just kept it as is, didn't change really, other than the keyboard didn't really change a thing.
And extra port.
Yeah, and the extra port is true.
I was definitely anticipating them shaving the bezel down a bit, you know, because if you look at it on paper, I know they've done a few more changes than that, but on the 15-inch going to 16-inch, it's mainly the bezel that's got it because the form factor's pretty much the same. But, I was amazed they didn't shave a bit of the bezel off. But there you go. Yeah.
Well, what are the other things that it didn't really get mentioned as much as well, but the reason why this Lite Pro model exists is you do realize there's no more MacBook, right?
Yeah, exactly. And
so it's like people get so hung up in the names, right? You could have called it a Cheesebook Flex and I would have I just ordered a 16, right? You would have ordered a Cheesebook Flex. It doesn't matter. I'm going to open it. I'm going to install Final Cut and all my live streaming software. I'm going to do the work that I need to do. Like what they called it and what they did with it is irrelevant. But however, people will get twisted over till their spine starts cracking over, like, you know, oh, well, this 13-inch MacBook Pro is not really a pro and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I bring this up every year we get into this pro argument. Do you get paid for what you do? Professional. If you don't get paid for what you do, but you absolutely love it, amateur.
Yeah.
Simple. That's been the rules invented by the Olympic Committee. And most people kind of stick with that, you know, for in general. You know, there are some people that call themselves pro that are extremely amateur, but you have to ignore those outliers and then go for what it is, right? If this tool does what you need it to do, then nobody is jacking you. And you know, when people say, well, this model is really, really expensive and blah blah blah, like the Mac Pro, well, you're a professional, so if you're charging your clients, they're paying for it, not you, so zip it.
Yeah, but there's always a difference between the people that are in a situation where they're willing to make a lot of sacrifices in the hardware that they buy, either because there's something that they want. There's something that they want that's like, I want the thinnest, lightest thing that I can possibly get. Or I have a price point that I really can't exceed. I've got $1,000 to spend on a laptop and that's it. That's total. The suffix pro is definitely a very malleable concept. I think that you're right in the broad sense, Doc. But then the end too. Okay, but now you're calling something the AirPods Pro, and like I'm a pro like podcast listener on the subway. The way that I choose to define it, at least with laptops, is that once you put the word pro on something, once you put something pro on something, plus there's an extra $800 that has to be spent, my expectation is that I'm going to be inconvenienced as little as possible. Mm-hmm. And so it's not so much the performance that kind of gets me, because I think that the performance of these machines is excellent. I'm probably I see myself as sort of the typical mid-range user, where I tend to buy the more expensive mid-range computer or low, high-end computer, because most of the stuff I do can be handled not just with a MacBook Air. It could be handled with a Chromebook, most of the stuff I do. But then there's the times where I'm using Photoshop and doing photo editing, and the few times I'm doing 4K video editing. It's not so much that I need to invest in $3,000 hardware, but it is enough that I would like that to go a little bit more smoothly. Mm-hmm. And the bigger deal for me is the inconveniences that I have to put up with MacBook Pro hardware, where it's nice that we get the two pairs of USB-C ports. And not just are they USB-C ports, but each one is equal in what they can do. It's not as though one is good for charging, yes, one can handle 4K video, the other one can't. They are, you can take your pick and do them all. However, I would be willing to take on the burden of maybe an extra quarter inch if it meant that I can actually plug HDMI into it directly, or I can plug Ethernet into it directly. And the loss of an SD card slot, mm-hmm, is also, again, it's not a deal breaker. I realize that I can spend $50 for a very good or even much less for a very good USB 3 card reader. But now you're talking about, A, I've got to buy another $100, $200 worth of stuff, but also I have to carry all this stuff with me. And so I'll wind this up by saying that I don't want to sound as though I'm really down on the MacBook Pro. I am so relieved to see this, to see this development. Just like Chuck said, I think the, for me, the biggest advantage of it is that they finally, Apple didn't apologize for the keyboard they put in all their MacBooks for the past 3 years. I mean, I would have liked to have seen one high-ranking person from that design team in full face protection, but nonetheless, like a randomly selected MacBook Pro user from the past 3 years gets to just fire paintballs at them from a safe 20-yard distance, full magazine. That they're not gonna get hurt, but they're gonna be chastised. They're gonna have a negative connotation to doing something that bad for the users. I mean, I'm not joking that for the past few years, I'm running a 2015 MacBook Pro, and usually I get about 4 years, 5 years out of a MacBook before it starts to not really do so well with the latest OS and the latest editions of software, or I've just start to wear the thing out. And so I was really, really worried over the past couple of years that if Apple were really committed to this keyboard that I personally absolutely can't use, I can't use it. Mm-hmm. I've tried it. I've had these things on loan for a couple of months, and I've been determined to spend an entire week writing my 1,000 to 8,000 words a day with it. And I just can't get through five paragraphs before realizing how much I'm hating every keystroke of this thing. And so, I realized that I really did have a plan B in mind, saying, okay, I have picked out the Lenovo ThinkPad, a Carbon X1 that I'm going to buy in 2020 or 2021. If my MacBook dies or for whatever the reason I need to replace it, because there is no way I'm going to give Apple $2,000 or even $1,000 for this thing that just demands that I just have this keyboard that I hate. And it's, so I'm glad to see that they have at least, it's just like everything, every other time that Apple has screwed up, there's never an apology. There's mm-hmm. never a, the worst that they will, the best they will ever do is to say, we think that this newly redesigned keyboard combines the best of the technology that we developed for the 2018, 2019 with new technologies that make it even better. Yeah, we said it was the best, now it's the bestest. But so that for me is the big leap up. I no longer have to contemplate having to switch to Windows 10 just to get a keyboard that I like, that I can use.
Yeah, it's the best keyboard they've ever made, right?
Yes.
Can I fix one thing? They are Thunderbolt 3 ports, not USB-C, and there is a major difference.
Sorry,
and
that's right.
And it's not you. That goes amiss by tons of people. I've actually made a handy chart to help people understand what are the specs that are different. But the other thing is you can plug HDMI directly because they are Thunderbolt 3 ports. So you can plug an HDMI to USB-C cable, and you can get them in television lengths. So you can, without a wide connector, just a tiny connector, you can pop in straight to your TV because there's one right there, right above my head. Yeah. And it's $17.99 on Amazon. So that is nice that it's there, but I do understand the idea of a straight HDMI cable because it's less likely to fall out than the tiny one. But yes,
you're absolutely right. That's one of the things I don't like about USB-C that whenever I talk to a general audience, usually on Fridays, I'm talking to a radio audience in Boston. And if I say Thunderbolt versus USB-C, they don't know what I'm talking about. And so you're right. It's important to make that distinction. But what I'm getting at is that there are so many times, I think a lot of us in this group, we travel a lot, and sometimes we do speaking. Sometimes we don't necessarily have with us everything that we need. Mm-hmm. I would like to have a MacBook that decides to forego again, maybe a quarter inch of thickness, to say that the next time that I'm doing a presentation and I'm at the podium and they might not have a HDMI over USB-C cable, but they do have the standard HDMI cable, I'm glad that my the Chromebook that I bought for $10 at the MIT flea market, that sucker's got HDMI, that sucker's got full USB 3, that sucker's got an Ethernet port, and it's like, oh man, I don't have to bring anything. All I have to do is just like bring electrons inside this thing, and I'm good. And again, I don't want to be unfair. For the record. Even the carbon, even the Lenovo carbon machine that I was going to get, you can't plug an Ethernet cable directly into it. But all I'm getting at is that when I get to Pro, I feel as though I hope to have fewer inconveniences. And in Apple's case, if they're going to take things away that if I find convenient, I hope they give me something in return. Mm-hmm. And this was a case of they took away stuff that was really useful to me, and all they did was take it away.
Yeah. Mm. I will
shut up now.
No, don't worry. Have any of you tried the new keyboard, like on the 16-inch at least?
Yes.
Is it better? Like, or can you compare it? Like, is it really better? I mean, other than it's hopefully more reliable.
Well, in my case, definitively better. Now, keep in mind, I got the 2016 MacBook Pro with the cursed keyboard. Mm-hmm. And mine was so cursed that by the time I was getting to the end of AppleCare, my computer had gone in for, I think it was on its fifth keyboard replacement.
Wow.
And keep in mind that my laptop sits on my desk most of the time, and I use an external keyboard. And still, my keyboard was dying. And the feel was kind of mushy. Mm-hmm. And the sound didn't bother me because I use the Matthias Tactile Pro. So it's a loud keyboard. But it was a lot louder than it should have been for as mushy as it felt. and when... They got to this to the last time they were going to replace it at the end of AppleCare. They were like, you know, this just isn't working out for us. So here's a 16-inch MacBook Pro to replace it, and we're sorry for your trouble. And that's been a great fix on many levels. But the keyboard has felt better, and it's just been overall a better keyboard for me. And I got this computer in, it was shortly after it came out. So I'm guessing November of 2019. And by this point into ownership with a 16-inch MacBook Pro, I was already getting my first keyboard replacement.
I've changed so many of those old keyboards.
Yeah.
So many.
I've got the new 16-inch, and I think it is a better experience. I'm not a keyboard snob, so it was not like I hated the old keyboard. Mm. It was just that's what it was. But I have to say that I like this better.
Yeah. You know,
if I put the two side by side, I could go back to the other one without too much trouble. But if I had a preference, yeah, I'll go with the new one.
Mm. Yeah. It does have the physical escape key and the inverted key, like.
Yeah, the inverted T turned out to be a lot more important to me than I realized.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So true.
And I didn't really think about it. But then when I got the new computer and I realized, oh, now I have the same inverted T layout that my external keyboard has. And I'm doing a lot of touch typing. It actually did make a big difference. Mm. The escape key wasn't as critical for me because the touch bar escape key for my needs was fine. But I totally appreciate why for a lot of people that physical escape key was so necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What disappoints me is that it disappoints me that Apple has missed the point that the keyboard is the tactile interface. Your fingers never leave it, and so this should be one of the gems of associated with a MacBook. And the reason why I had decided on the ThinkPad was that their keyboards are absolutely best in class. They actually pride themselves on how good the keyboards are. I like them. They're so good that For a while, they used to make like their, they used to put like their standard like notebook keyboards into like USB and Bluetooth like externals. And as soon as I found them, I have like four of these just in a closet. And it's just like you say, you don't realize how much you like the inverted T until like it's taken away and you get it back. Yeah. And also things like, I didn't realize how much I like having a page up and a page down key, like on a mobile keyboard, until I started using it. And it's just a joy to use. It bugs me that that Apple is not leading the way. It double bugs me that the reason why they went into this failure is that it's just a simple, stupid design choice. It's an aesthetic choice. That's the reason why we make fun of Apple, and usually we blow it out of proportion, just for comic effect. But really, it was, you decided to put like this super, 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 super flat keyboard, not just in your pro level laptop, but if I give you $5,000 for an iMac Pro, you send me an external keyboard that has these super, super flat keys, and you realize I'm not going to be like putting this keyboard in my pocket and walking with my Mac, are you? That you can actually afford to give me like actual full half stroke keys.
It's for me, it sounded like they tried to improve something and just went completely overboard, like didn't really like think it through, or like missed the point, kind of.
And we have to, I think we have to bring it up, you know, the departure of Johnny Ive. I mean, was Johnny making some of these decisions based on strictly the aesthetics, and taking nothing away from Johnny, because he did some has done and will continue to do some amazing work, but there were times that it felt like some of the compromises were being made in favor of design over practicality.
Well, I mean, with Apple, I would say almost always, like there was always some aspect of a device where I was like, yeah.
This is also the company that decided that, okay, now we need to put an SD card slot so that people can like put in cards and take out cards, because it's a big access thing. Where should we put that? I know. Let's put it on the back of this 24-inch screen so that they'll have to turn the entire thing around to put in a card from their camera.
Mm-hmm.
So that it doesn't mess up the beautiful bezel in the front.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Exactly. And what's crazy is the side of the machine, as skinny as it is, you actually could have fit it in the side of the bezel, where, you know what I mean? Yep. And it still would have been a biggie. But the back, I have never used that port, but I have the reach around connector, bad name, sorry. But you plug it in the back and it comes around to the front and clinks on. And it does make the iMac look stupid, but I love having it there. So I have
it's big one. It's very good. I've got one.
Yep.
Yeah. Doc, I would make the argument that it makes Apple look stupid.
Yeah. Okay.
That you had to put it on there.
Yeah.
I would have loved either that or, you know, like a Thunderbolt port on the side to use something like this HyperDisk thing that I use for my iPad. When this is on the iPad, it doesn't bother me. But, man, is it nice to have access to these on the fly.
Yep.
And this is such a weird thing I bought from Kickstarter. I actually forgot I had it. And then Patrice was like, hey, I found this. I bought this too, and I forgot I had it. And I was like, wait, I forgot I had mine too. And then, but I used it on one trip, and it was in the bottom of the suitcase. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, this is amazing little guy right here.
Yeah. Last point about the 13-inch before we move on. There were some benchmarks as well. As we already talked a little bit about the CPUs. And the single core and the multi-core like scores are actually pretty decent. I'm just gonna doesn't mention it on here actually on that article. The average single core score was 927, which is I think even slightly better than the 16-inch MacBook Pro, the base model. For the eighth generation i5, and the multi-core is 3800, which obviously is like about half of what the 16-inch MacBook Pro can do. Which isn't surprising. I mean, it's a smaller device. It's less powerful. But the real screamer is the Core i7 version, which is like significantly better. I mean, the 16-inch still beats it on multi-core. But yeah, I mean, it is a pretty impressive like score given the price, like $1,299 and $1,799. if you really think about it. I would say it is definitely a, I mean, what you said earlier, like a, it's not a full, like a pro version, but it's like the, what did you call it? Medium pro?
Well, pro light.
The pro light. Yeah. It's kind pro of, that's light. Kind of, that's kind of it.
Well, you can get straight ball out pro, but you got to take the higher model and switch it to an i9 mm-hmm. because an i9 processor and something 13 inch is just pseudo ridiculous. I don't know if you guys remember when Toyota made the MR2.
Oh, yeah.
basically an engine with a Toyota logo, a seat, and a radio. So I almost killed myself in one of those things because it was so fast because it didn't weigh anything. It was like a 2,600-pound V6 car, and most of that weight was the engine and myself. You know, so you know, you hit a corner in one of those things, and you if you don't grab on tight, you're gone. and so that's what I'm thinking. Like this core nine, slapped up, you know, throw the 32 gigs in it, and one of the things that Apple never gets enough credit for, because it's something that it's sort of internal and not talked about a lot. Their internal drives are quick; they're ridiculously quick. You know. The sad part is you're not changing it, you know, or the RAM, you know, you're not changing it. And from someone who used to deal with a lot of, you know, Macs crapping out because of third party RAM, I understand why they did what they did. I just wish they didn't do it.
Mm. Yeah. That's my biggest qualm about buying new MacBooks, because I was talking about my 2015, that SSD died on me last year, the year before. And it was, I think, the last generation hardware where the SSD was on a module. Mm-hmm. Now, it was not on a compatible M2 module, but you could buy just a little edge card adapter so that I could solve this problem and also upgrade my storage for $120. Whereas if I taken to the Apple store, it would have been it had been soldered on, that's an entire motherboard swap. And there is, mm-hmm. and there's just no point to spending $800 to fix an SSD on what would have been like a 4-year-old laptop. That would have forced me into a $2,000 purchase, which would be so super galling. Mm-hmm. If I would talk to my friend of mine who has a Lenovo Carbon X1, say, "Oh, really? I just did like my mom's, I passed my old one to my mom and she needs, so I just like mailed her like a $80 module and she swapped it in herself." I'm like, "Screw you, Todd. You're supposed to be my friend."
Man, Todd's a jerk.
Always Todd. What is with it?
But it's funny because on the larger ones, the 16s, you can change the drive, right?
I believe so.
You have to check.
Yeah.
Wait, seriously? You can change the drive on my...
I'll just double check. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm looking right now.
Yeah, look that up.
Yeah. The RAM thing is really, really annoying. I mean... I have a 2017 MacBook Pro, like 15 inch, and I'm in dire need of more RAM for work, and like there's no way, like it's just like not possible at all, and it's kind of a bummer because like I have to deal with it. I like simply can't get a new Mac right now.
I feel your pain.
Yeah, so that's like, I mean, our application needs like 10 gigabytes of RAM.
No, it's soldered to the motherboard, unfortunately.
Yeah, so there's simply no way. Yeah. Oh, okay.
I'm on the 16 inch.
Okay, so the SSD is still soldered. Damn it.
They're never going to get back from that.
What's funny is we have eGPUs, and eGPUs have come a long way. And in theory, you can actually put an SSD out in an eGPU. Or not an eGPU, in an external chassis, because it will access itself through the PCI Express, which is built into Thunderbolt 3, which is why it's different from USB-C. Mm-hmm. So you can actually put on a ripping external drive that's faster than even the one that's in there now, because you can put a PCI Express 4.0 drive and just plug it right to the side. So there's a possibility in the drive side, but the RAM side, we still don't have external RAM. But we used to way back in the day.
Yeah.
In the original Apple, we had external RAM, right? Through the grappler, Remember the grappler and Orange Micro had one.
Oh God, that is.
Yeah, and myself. Callum was like,
"You also got Floating Point Basic. About? Don't forget, you also got Floating Point Basic with that."
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's funny. You had to buy the Floating Point chip. Remember, you had to buy FPU. Actually, we did have FPU. So, Callum's face is like, "What the hell are these geezers talking about?"
But, all right, Callum, you need to look up 80 column card.
Hello, Generation Z.
God
bless you and millennials who've never had to wire up a paddle controller button to act as a shift key.
Yeah, like it's funny, but no one will remember. It started to turn it into the geezer show, but you actually had to buy a card to put in your machine to be able to print. You hear me? You had to buy a printer card.
Okay, first of all, like, la-di-da, look at Mr. Rothschild Van Vanderswing, whose home could afford to own a printer back in the day. it wasn't quite the same thing.
That is super funny. So, yeah, I would love to see the ability for there to be external RAM or something of that nature, or maybe even with these PCI Express cards being as fast as they are, maybe there's a software that you could do like virtual RAM, like we used to do back in the day where you set part of your stuff aside for VRAM in order to, I forgot the name of the extension that we had, but you would run the RAM that way. So
memory doubler, RAM doubler.
Memory doubler, RAM doubler, oh, yeah. RAM doubler. Yes, oh my. There you go. Wow, Jeff. Woo. Jeff with the block. Okay, I'll take recyclable chassis for 300, Alex.
and then we would take a pencil, because if the cassette got a little bit off the sprint, you'd have to like sort of tighten it up a little bit. And, oh, yeah. Golly.
I need to do some reading.
Yeah, oh wait, this is the British tech show tries to say. Yeah. Bloody Thatcher. Say it right.
All right. I do get that one. I've got that one.
That would be the 80 column card.
Yeah.
The 80 column card, yes.
Yeah.
I was the bomb because my 80 column card also supported lowercase.
Wow.
And all my other friends, all they had was uppercase 40 columns.
No. See, you're doing it wrong. We're supposed to be bragging about how we had it tough back as kids, as opposed to, oh, my family was so rich, we had an X80 column card. My experience was that I switched my word processor. I switched to, or rather, the word processor that I stole, I pirated, was Magic Window, because it was the first one that was did its own like a graphics based text renderer. And so you could not only get upper and lower case, you get not 80 columns, but you could get close to like 60 columns, like without having to buy the 80 column card. So innovation, desperation inspires innovation.
Speaking of, go ahead.
Chuck. No, I absolutely remember driving 45 minutes one way to spend $90 on a 16K RAM card.
Which is kind of course, $90.
We had. I also did my own memory upgrade. As I recall, I found a hack so I could do rope memory, like they had in the old Apollo modules, where you had to weave it by hand and put these little memory cores on it. Yeah. And if you missed a single nut, oh boy, you were not, I'm telling you, you are not playing Karateka that day, my friend.
So, switching a little bit topics, the other, I think, bigger like release last couple of weeks was the Magic Keyboard for the iPad, and iFixit just released they partnered up with a company called Creative Electron, and they released an X-ray of like the internals of the iPad, which is like really, really interesting. I mean, one, you can clearly see that they are using the scissor switches for the keys instead of the butterflies. Which, I mean, is, I think, a massive improvement. We just talked about that.
Yep.
What's also very interesting is there seem to be some kind of metal plates below the keyboard, probably to stabilize it and make it a little bit more heavy.
That's my assumption.
Stable. Yeah.
Their weights.
Yeah.
But what really struck me is that the trackpad is different than I would have thought. Like, I mean, in the MacBook Pros, there's basically no button. Like, it's all kind of fake, kind of. I mean, it's the...
It is similar to an iPhone 7 home button in the sense of when it's turned off, it doesn't actually click.
Exactly.
But it does have a physical button.
But in the trackpads, there are four buttons, actually, on the iPad trackpad. There are actually four buttons underneath that trackpad. So it's not a simulated haptic feedback. That's what the word was. I was looking for.
The four buttons are that. What's the word I'm looking for? Actuated, not actuators. They're brain switches. They're switches, but they're designed that you can tell the weight between A, B, C, and D, and then you calculate according to that.
Yep.
Or you can basically like if
you know what the most irritating part about this story is. Okay, so. For the longest time, the office that I sit in right now used to be a chiropractor's office. And in the room right behind me, he had an x-ray machine. My office was two doors down. This dude and I are great friends. Like, I used to hang out and talk story with him damn near every day for about 5 years. So during the whole time I was writing it to during the very beginning of the iPhones coming out and the iPads coming out and the Apple TVs and all of this great Apple tech that came out during that time, it was not until the day before he left where I go, hey, I wonder what happens if I x-ray my iPhone. He goes, yeah, dude, that's a good idea. So we taped our iPhones to the wall, and he had a digital x-ray machine. So when you press the button, it's like literally like 30 seconds later, it's in the computer. And we see an image just like what we see now. That was an entire blog, podcast, YouTube, whatever I could have done forever. Never, ever thought of it until the day before he was disconnecting the x-ray machine to move to Tennessee.
If I had a neighbor with a friend with an x-ray machine, I would say, hey, I wonder what's inside my ham sandwich. I know that I just made it 10 minutes ago, but just for fun. I think it is doing a good service that I know that a lot of people kind of blanched when they saw the price of the Magic Keyboard, because $350 for what we've been trained by history to think is like a mobile portable keyboard for a tablet seemed like a very, very stereotypically Apple. Like, okay, yes, of course. You couldn't just have a hinge. You had to have the miraculous floating hinge and tell us about the new alloy of aluminium that you commissioned specifically for the end cap buttons. But I think the teardown or the virtual teardown, excuse me, the physical and the virtual teardown they did really shows that this is something quite special that they, I think that Apple was quite aware that there are going to be lots of people, Logitech and others, who are going to be making superb $150, $100, whatever dollar keyboards out there, and that they had their opportunity was to make something special that really shows off the iPad Pro and also continues the ongoing campaign to put the iPad Pro in anybody's decision matrix, anybody who's going out there with $1,000 to spend on a Windows laptop, particularly say, well, why are you spending $1,000 on a Windows laptop with a touchscreen that's convertible? That's kind of okay, but it's not an iPad. Here's everything you could do with an iPad. And now that you can actually have a trackpad with it, you don't have to always be doing this as you're trying to like get something done during a deadline. It really is a credible sort of thing. And it's also a good justification for spending, let's not forget, $1,000 and up for what is a tablet computer. But it really does make the case that there are reasons why this costs $1,000. And that's because it can do things that a lot of $700, $800 Windows laptops can't do.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Apple is still selling the old smart keyboards.
Yeah.
For what is I don't know, $199 probably, something like that, if I remember correctly. And then there's the Logitech one, which is I think $150.
It's favorite.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, there are enough options, and Apple's definitely the higher end version. But you get something for it. I mean, it's not from what I've heard from people who've reviewed it, it's not portable. I mean, you can carry it around. But it's not supposed to be. Like, it's kind of a desktop docking station.
Oh, yeah, it's heavy. It is heavy. Jerome has the tiny one, and I was like, he handed it to me so that I could check it out. And I was like, whoa, it's heavier than you expect.
Yeah.
But that's a nice
It has to be to prevent all the flex that's going to happen when suspending an iPad Pro above it.
Yeah.
And the only thing that disappoints me about it is that the one reason why I don't take for a long, long time before I got my Pixel Book, my iPad Pro was my go-to for I'm going to New York for a meeting, or particularly for like a media event where I'm going to be taking notes with from a seat in an auditorium. And the only reason why for those like 2-day trips I was taking an actual laptop instead of my iPad was that there's just no way to actually use it in your lap. Mm-hmm. And make that work. So it's I'm disappointed, but not like angered, yeah. not militantly angered by the fact that for $350 they couldn't find like that, they couldn't create that kind of a solution. But again, there I can't remember the name, but now they're the same company that's making really really great keyboard trackpad cases for pretty much every tablet Bridge, combat Bridge. Out there. Thank you very much. Yeah. Bridge is out there, and that's another example. I'd be willing to. People point out that it is actually thicker than I think a MacBook Pro once you've got the iPad in there and everything together. But the thing is, you could take your iPad out of it.
Yep.
And I have no problem with like having, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to find an extra 8 mil of space in my laptop bag for this immensely absurdly thick keyboard case? I will absolutely take that. I'll take the extra weight too. Mm-hmm. If it means I can do, I can use things more comfortably and more practically. There's again, the one thing that I don't think Apple 100% gets is how important like the tactile interface mm-hmm. is, how important these physical things are. They get it to a certain extent, but then they'll do something like the Magic Mouse, which looks beautiful. It's another of course a Joni Ive regime design, but I just can't use it. It's like this is like the basic $10-$20 like Microsoft mouse, where they realize that it should be a certain thickness. It should have like little indentations on the side so your fingers can find it. It's not even particularly like the $50 ones are even more ergonomic. Apple makes something that is like, we decided to take a clam, like a really thin clam. We ripped off one shell, put a sensor on the bottom of it. Good luck gripping the sides of it, but damn, doesn't it look nice on your desktop? Because yeah. Again, as a static object, it's a beautiful thing. However, yeah. I got stuff to do, man.
And the charge port is on the other side. So.
Yeah. That's okay. It takes, I'll defend Apple on yeah. that one. It takes like 2 minutes to charge up. You do that once every few months. But yeah, that was another thing that people would have to make fun of. I would, I was talking about how, I generally from all my desktop stuff, I use like wired mouses because at some point Bluetooth or even like a custom wireless fob is mm-hmm. going to let me down because I put the mouse somewhere on the desktop where it can't connect reliably, or after like 10 hours on a plane or whatever, I have to repair something with something else. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice to have for the Magic Mouse, particularly at that price, to have the Lightning port on an edge so that if I wanted to use it as a regular wired mouse without any issue, I could do that. But I'd much rather have it just they're really great at building cars that have like seats that are made out of vinyl and they're 8 inches wide, and but you realize my butt is going to be in there for probably like 2 or 3 hours a day, right? Ooh, but look what it does to the line of the car. Look what it does to the line in the back of my butt, man. No.
Yeah. You know the funny thing about this this expensive keyboard trip is I probably would have said it was expensive first, and I felt it, so I now get it. But I have been going down the rabbit hole, which is mechanical keyboards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And spec'd out to what I want right now for 100%er with Cherry MX Browns, with an aluminum case, with changeable color LEDs according to my mood, and PBT Apple keycaps. I am almost at $700.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this is what my world is for half of my waking hours at the very least. That's when I'm not on like a book deadline or a big production deadline. It is so worth the money to spend. This one only costs like $150. It's a code keyboard, but once you get like once you return from laptop style keyboard to something with that wakes the neighbors, so to speak, and you realize that I'm not making as many mistakes, my hands are happier. You gotta make your work environment as conducive to not wanting to leave the desk as you possibly can, because there's so many other things they're trying to make you leave the desk, whereas a keyboard is something you can solve very easily.
Does code have a 98 or 100%er? I do a lot of CAD work for my CNC, so I need the 10 key. Also, for editing, 10 key is key.
I'm not sure. This is a 10 key, and you can configure it with whatever style switches that you want.
Hold it up. There's no number pad. TKL, 10 key less.
Sorry, 10 key less. Sorry, but
I need number pad.
They do make a version of that.
Okay, I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, I have to admit that that is such a fun rabbit hole to go down, because I was exactly with you, like that when I was like shopping for like a good keyboard. So I was like, ooh, but maybe I could get like the deck 10 style terminal keyboard caps. And I had like if you never shop for keyboards, you can actually buy either from the keyboard manufacturer or just in general. They will send you like a Whitman sampler, like a little strip of like a PCB board with like six different keys like mounted on it. So you can say, I want to try the red brown, the red blue. I also want to have the rubber inner caps for this. And you can actually like, before you spend $100, $200, $300 on the keyboard, actually test drive. It's not actually wired up to anything, but you can test the feel of it. And so I bought that. It was like buying like a luxury car where they send you like a 1/10 scale model of the $8 million car you're about to buy with all the leather and all the paint. And you can really spend months and months and months just trying to make every choice you possibly can. And I almost did this. I went with this. Maybe I could have been more creative. I just realized that if I kept being creative and making more decisions, it would be months and months and months if I ever made a decision. So I said, okay, black, white illuminated keys, done, go, order it.
Apple is apparently about to release a new Apple TV, at least according to rumors, multiple rumors. It is ready to ship with a A12X chip. Not much more like has leaked about it, other than that there were signs in, I think, was it 13.4, one of the betas. There was some information about it. But like if you had to like guess or pick what your preferred next Apple TV would look like, what would that be for you?
I'm cool with what they put out, because right now it works amazingly. I just need a new one. Because the one I have right now is going on. Well, this one's a 4K, so it's new. But the one that's upstairs is older, and I just want a new one. And the only thing I really want them to fix is I want them and Google to stop arguing, and fix the V9 crap, because not being able to get 4K on Safari in YouTube or Web OS in YouTube pisses me off. It's so horrible. Everything else works, your Netflix, all of that, but YouTube and their V9 support and Apple fighting over dumb stuff, stop it. Just give me that and I'm cool.
The one thing I'd like to see is that I'd like to be able to attach an external storage device and play content from there. That's the one thing that they just refuse to do, and I still have a lot of ripped content that I don't need to use up my bandwidth streaming. I've got it, and I can buy a super cheap. Heck, I can buy a super cheap SSD for something like this that'll be very fast and not take up much energy. And that would be just give me that little port. That's all I need, and the hardware to do it.
There used to be a USB-C port at some point, and then they removed it.
I do that through Plex now, and yes, it's easy and all of that, but I agree with Chuck. I would love to just stick the drive on the bottom and have DLNA support directly just play it. You know what I mean? And yes, you actually can do it, Chuck, if you buy a Western Digital or one of the drives that have DLNA support. You don't have to build a whole Plex server like I did. But if you ask all of us Plex people, will tell you go to Plex route anyway, just because it's gorgeous.
Yep.
And they have some TV channels and streaming and podcasts and all this stuff built in. And the number one reason why I built the Plex server wasn't even the view media. It was my music. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like taking control of my iTunes. And it all started when Jim Dalrymple had an iTunes library meltdown. And he wouldn't stop going off about it for about 4 years. At the very beginning of that, I just started testing Plex for an article I wrote for TUAW. And I have a 20 terabyte Plex system sitting in the room right next to me. And I my music library is anywhere I go. So when I'm doing a wedding gig, and someone says, do you happen to have this old cha-cha-cha song? I don't know if you remember this, but this kind of came out in the blah, blah, blah. Or do you have like the Thornberry song? And without having to deal with iTunes or Spotify or whatever, I have it. It's on my Plex. And because I just got sick of carrying around a big drive for my DJ stuff. You know, now I carry a small SSD, but I can still get that really quickly as long as I have internet access.
Yeah. Doc, say that again about the Western Digital.
Western Digital, well, all the drive manufacturers, actually, let me pull it up real quick. They have a media-oriented MyBook that has a built-in DLNA server. And with the DLNA server, there's a bunch of apps you can get off of the app store that basically, without rolling your own Plex, you have all your media in your folder segmented however you like. And it will actually just play them directly through the Wi-Fi.
DLNA is a network standard, so that specifically for media. Right. And so it broadcasts itself on the network and says, hi, I am a source of music and video and photos, so that whether you've got a phone app, whether you've got like a streaming device, whatever you got, it will find it. And the app on your phone or device is now responsible for like presenting you with directories, presenting you with tools to actually find stuff. But that's how it works. But I'm totally, totally with you, Doc. I think maybe a year before you, I realized that I've got all my music in iTunes, and I'm not listening to any of my music because iTunes is such a pile of goat fur. It is so useless. And I looked around and I found Plex, and ever since I switched to Plex, every time I have, it quickly solved every problem I had. And then it moved on to every time I had an idea for how I would like to organize or access something, I found that there was a solution somewhere in Plex. But this gets back to Apple TV, that this is the problem that Apple TV has in my eyes is that overwhelmingly the top sellers are Amazon's Fire Stick and Roku. They are 100. Yes. Can you believe that the Apple TV hardware has the exact same market share, almost, I'm sorry, a little bit more market share than Android TV or Google TV. That was surprising because no one ever talks about Google's TV solution. But when you look at the Apple TV doesn't do anything that's markedly better than these sticks that cost $40 or $50. But for an Apple TV, the cheapest one is $179. And that's with 32 gigs of storage. 64 gigs is $199. And once again, that's only for storage of like local apps that you want to download to it. For that same amount of money, I got the Android TV box that's in the living room. That one has multiple USB ports. So just as you want, Chuck, I can plug in either a permanent hard drive into it and have that just as it will automatically, any app on that device will be able to drink from that storage. Or even if I just have a flash drive that has some stuff on it that I just want to import in, that'll work. It has really, really muscular apps. It's a full-featured game console. The thing that I love the most about it is that we're talking about how I have a 10 terabyte NAS for my Plex, on a Synology NAS in the back of me. Doc has 20. For this less than $200, it has its own Plex server on it. Mm-hmm. And so you can actually just have this thing as a video server, not just for the TV and the speakers you plugged it into, but all the TVs in your house and across the internet. That can you can record video. We have DVR. That's the stuff you get for about $200. I think it's $250, but I think the cheaper one might be less than $200.
I was just going to show him the two bay Synology is $299 right now. I personally would never buy a two bay because I'll run out of that real quick. But then the four bay one is only like $399. And if you have older drives behind you, just stick those in there, or just get iron wolves because they're not that expensive anymore. Right. So you can roll your own solution, or alternatively, you could just take an old Mac and slap a gigantic external hard drive on it and run Plex server right on the old Mac. It's a good way to repurpose an old Mac. Like I have my server was running on a 2012 Mac Mini, And then I just decided I wanted to go stupid with it and go all in because it is so nice to travel and never worry about this, something junk on the plane. You know, with Plex, you can sync your plane content. Like, I want to rewatch Lord of the Rings because it's a long flight. And I have, you know, like four of the movies. And you just hit the button and it syncs it to the iPad. So when I wake up in the morning to go to the airport, it's already on my iPad. And then it's a miniaturized version. When I come home, it automatically deletes itself. So I don't have to remember to delete it, you know, so I can put my movies, my audio books, whatever I need for the trip. It's a gorgeous thing. Blow your own Plex, Chuck. It's a good thing for your show.
It's a NAS is a great thing to have on your network. I'm sorry. When I was talking about price, I was talking about the NVIDIA Shield that I have. So I just double checked the latest version is, and this is like the 2019 version that's so popular you can't actually get it. But that's $199, and it really is a network computer that if you just want to run Netflix and YouTube and stuff like that, sure you can do that. But as soon as I'm always so pleased by technology purchases like my NAS, like Plex, where I buy it to solve a very simple, accessible problem. Like in the case of my NAS, it was, I just want to have I now have enough data and enough storage that storage problems. I want to have one big centralized storage I can access from anywhere. But then when I wanted to, when I reached my creosote point with iTunes, where I'm sorry, I cannot take even another wafer thin portion of the BS that iTunes is dealing with me. Like, oh, well, I can install Plex on this box that I've already paid for. Like, oh my God, this is great. Mm-hmm. And on and on and on and on. That's what I'm getting at. It's just, it's a bummer that if Apple's going to do one thing with the Apple TV, I would like to see them do something under $100. No one can. It's packed full of features that are so simple that if they really can't compete with what's happening on Fire TV and what's happening on Roku. The Apple TV is a beautiful box for people who don't care what the hardware is. They just want to access Netflix. They just want to access Apple TV Plus, Apple Plus or whatever. So that's the bummer for me. I can't recommend it to anybody because it's just too much money for too little actual solution. It has no ceiling on it. It has no ceiling on it.
Well, thanks for this conversation. I just looked up Raspberry Pi Plex server you know, I have several Raspberry Pis sitting around doing nothing have hard drives sitting around doing nothing. So my weekend project is now to set up my Raspberry Pi Plex server.
The only about Raspberry Pi Plex server, the only bad thing, Jeff, is when you do go to Transcode Media to take off on the flight, do it like 3 days in advance because it can't transcode very fast. I'm not even joking. It's a Raspberry Pi. It can't transcode fast.
Yeah, especially if it's 4K content or anything like that.
You want to get it down to your iPad size, it takes a while. But other than that, it's gorgeous. It's such a gorgeous
trip. It took me an afternoon. I'm sorry. We've hijacked this topic because we're so excited about it. But one of my favorite and most prolific Raspberry Pi projects was it took me like a half hour to do, but I installed Plex on it. I have like a version of my library. And so whenever I travel and I know it's going to be more than 2 or 3 days, I actually travel with like a Raspberry Pi in an enclosure that's about the size of two decks of cards stacked on top of each other. And it is a fully featured Plex server. And all I have to do is like plug it via HDMI into the back of the hotel TV in my hotel room. And I have like all my music, all my movies. I don't have to worry about what channel is ESPN on or what channel is the movie channel on, because pretty much everything that I have DVR, I'll copy files from my DVR from the NAS like onto this thing. So where there was a really cool conference at Yosemite National Park, and there is no internet like at Yosemite. And so I found that out the first year. The second year I had this, I think that's why I first built it. The second year, because, you know, I still had to do work. I still had to do like 3 or 4 hours of writing every night. And I do have to have like, I need to, what does my brain need for like, to keep myself entertained and sitting down in front of the keyboard? Mm. And the fact that this $34 computer with this free app, you buy a Plex Pass for all the extra features, but this really, really simple app, I could buy this. This is the sort of thing that that 12-year-old me would have gone insane for. This is what 12-year-old me was expecting in 2020, that Have you seen the new Star Wars movie? Why, yes, young Andy. Matter of fact, I have all the Star Wars movies, plus all the Raiders of the Lost Ark movies, plus all the albums that you have on this device right here. And it's all, wow, future Andy, this is awesome. That's right. So make sure that you know that time when you get to be 18 and you almost drive drunk? There's a good reason why you shouldn't do that, because you should live to see... You want to see the 20th century. You might want to fast forward past the 2020s, because it gets a little bit hairy there for a few years, but after that.
Yeah. This podcast and all the other podcasts on the network are supported by TSL Hosts. It's a really great hosting company. BTN probably wouldn't exist anymore without it. We get really great servers from them. So all the shows, like all the past shows, like the entire archive, all the live stream, like what we're doing right now, everything is hosted on TSO host servers. But in addition to that, they also have some other really great things. I mean, you can buy domain names for, I would say, reasonably priced, like pretty cheap, actually. You can have web hosting, like if you have a website. They also offer like pre-built servers for example, WordPress. If you want to set up a podcast or want to set up a whatever e-commerce website or whatever you want to do, they have like pre-built packages for a lot of things. They offer some other really really cool stuff as well. I think most importantly, they're really nice and they're really, really helpful. Like if you ever run into any issues, which to be honest, we haven't had too many, but I've seen on Twitter a couple of people that had questions, their support was like really on it and like tried to help people right away and like respond in like basically no time. So it's a really, really great company. We're really happy to have them. So if you're in need of a like whatever a website, a domain, email accounts, whatever you might need in that general direction, head over to tsohost.com. And I've forgotten about the offer code. I think there's an offer code as well. we'll have to ask Ewan for that.
I'm sure it's generous and wonderful.
It is absolutely generous and wonderful. And the other,
I think it's BTN20.
Oh, that could be, yes.
Or BTN2020 rings a bell.
Yeah, it rings a bell. That could be. And the other really awesome company is IMAND Max. And since we have Callum here, I can ask him, what's the Mac of the hour right now? Like what do you have, Cole?
We've still got plenty of 21.5-inch iMacs in. So I think we've got at least 4 more in. Pop onto the website, have a quick look. So it's starting to creep back up a bit now in terms of being able to get stock, but we still have plenty available. So go onto the website, you get 5% off as well. If you mention BTN at the checkout, everything comes with a 6-month warranty as well. So pop onto the website and see if there's anything you want to have.
And you don't only repair Macs, you also repair, as we talked about, Beats headphones. There was some other stuff we've talked about, like over the time.
There's been a few different things, yeah. So, a very, very broken Pixel Book from The Big Show a couple of weeks ago. very, very broken. We do Beats headphones as well. We do obviously any Apple products as well, and we do data recovery too. So,
So I would just suggest if you have anything that is broken, that is, I would say, electronics in general, reach out to IMAND Max and they will see whether they can help you and like what it was cost. Whether you're in the UK or not, I think I'm in Austria and we talked about it and we're like, yeah, we can just ship it to you. Like it's not a big deal. So they're like really, really flexible.
Definitely ask the question. Even if you're not sure, just ask us and we can let you know very quickly, even if it's just a bit of advice as well. Mm-hmm.
All right. Good. Then it's time for the cool thing. Chuck, get us started.
Okay. This sort of leverages the conversation Andy and I were having pre-show about wired versus not wired. I recently just got tired of dealing with the questionable connectivity that seems to come with a Wi-Fi, especially when you're trying to do video like this. And so I upgraded everything in my office to a hardwired Ethernet connection. and that meant I had to have a lot of ports. So I got the TP-Link 16-port switch, and I'll put the link in the show notes here in a minute, or in the chat, I should say, in the minute. I really looked at the 24-port, and I thought, no, if I need 24 ports in a home office, I have a problem, a hardware problem. So I went with 16. That took care. Yeah, I see a couple hands raised. So I went with the 16, which took care of everything and left me a few ports to expand if I need to. And really the performance increase, I mean, I knew what it would be. It's just kind of impressive to see it when you're shoving, you know, hundreds of gigabytes around to different devices or different storage options. So if you're relying on the Wi-Fi, that's great. But if you really want the performance, just spend a few bucks. Because really, I was kind of surprised. I hadn't looked at switches for a while. They're really, really affordable. And it makes all the difference in the world. So that's my pick. Is I did the TP-Link, and I got I will explain it this way. If you go to the link, you'll see. I got the long one because the stacked ones always, I never could seem to get my fingers in there to, you know, get them unplugged properly. But the stacked, the long one, just there's one long row of connections, and you've got it. So that would be my pick, is go hardwired. Maybe a little retro, but the performance is absolutely there.
All right. Thank you. Jeff, what you've got for us, since you have to bail out in a couple of minutes.
Yes. So I will talk fast. So this is an app that you can buy, or you can also get it through SetApp, and it's called Unite 3. And what I love about Unite 3 is that there are certain services that I use that are web-based, but I would prefer to have an app on my Mac for them. So with Unite, all I have to do is drop in the URL for the service. So for example, we use Asana for tracking all the projects we're working on, web-only interface on the Mac. So I popped the Asana URL into Unite, and it spits out a Mac native application. It's really a wrapper for the web page, but it gives me a Mac native application, which is what I need so that I can hop between Windows easily. And it's a $15 app, or if you have SetApp, it's just included. And it's fantastic.
Very nice. Can you tell people really quick where they can find you?
Sure. And then I will gracefully bow out. You can find me at textexpander.com, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamet, both places. Also, next Thursday, I have a beginner Text Expander webinar. So if you want to pick up some more Text Expander tips, then sign up. It's free. And it's been great. And I will see everyone for the big show later on.
Thanks for being here. We'll see you
all
later.
All right, thanks. Okay. It's been awesome. See everyone.
Thank you.
Take it easy, Jeff.
Yes, Jeff.
Mr. Natko, what is your pick for today?
It's now that we're all getting like really, really bored with doing remote meetings. just to basically keep your level of interest up, you can play with some like physical electronic backgrounds. The BBC has released a set of photos of empty sets from their like present and old TV productions. So if you do a Google search for BBC empty sets, and they've got sets from a whole bunch of different shows. This is the modern Doctor Who. All that really matters is that they have the shows that you actually like. You can see how bad. Sorry for how badly like Zoom mats things, but here is a. The Young Ones. So if you kind of need to fly. Basically, it's not just flying the flag of your geekdom. It's also I'm a communications professional, and so I long ago learned that if I just buy like $100 like set of screens, I never have to clean my office behind me. Not all of you have made that same wise choice. Nope. And so if you don't have, I think that it's perfectly acceptable to say that I can either spend the next half hour creating an Instagram version of what my house or office is like, or I can spend, or I can order a $100 screen to put behind me, or I could just simply download a cool Doctor Who backdrop and just simply say that, oh yes, I'm quite the nut. It's not because I haven't really vacuumed or taken out any of these empty soda cans from the office in the past month or two. No.
No. Okay, thank you. Callum, what have you got for us?
My pick is an app called Tooth Fairy. It's part of Setapp. I believe it costs about $5 on the Mac if you want to just buy it outright. And it's basically just a little tool that helps you with Bluetooth connected stuff. So I've been playing around with it today. I've got a Bluetooth keyboard and I've got a set of Bluetooth headphones. And basically what it does, it puts a little button in the dock at the top of your screen. Not the dock, the toolbar at the top of the screen. And all you have to do is press it, and provided they're turned on, it will just automatically connect it. So it just takes out a couple of layers of going into system preferences and finding what it is. And I know myself, I've got long lists of all sorts of things that connect because obviously I'm at home at the moment, and you go into the office, there's a whole other set of stuff you connect to. So really handy to just have a button to press and part of the setup as well. So really handy.
So if you already got set up, like me, for example, I'm using Tooth Fairy too, and it's really great. Like, especially for your AirPods. Like, if you're connecting your AirPods constantly, like switching between devices. I mean, it's easy on the iPhones and the iPads, but on the Mac, it's usually a little bit more difficult. You have to go through the Bluetooth menu and whatever. This just puts a button there. It looks like AirPods. You just tap it, done. Like,
yeah. I had an old pair of Bluetooth headphones. Mm-hmm. That I found, I wanted to connect them, and it took me about 25 minutes to get them connected on the Mac. So having that button there does help.
Yeah,
definitely. It does.
All right. Last but not least, we got Doc.
Alrighty, I'm going to go with, it's sidetracked what I was going to pick, but I'll save it for next week. But I'm going to go with get yourself a Plex Pass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And here's why. Okay, first of all, it's $5 a month, but don't do that. Pay $40 and get it for the year, or pay $120 and have it for life and never deal with it. And best $120 I spent, like, I want to call it about 10 years ago. And so still flexing the Plex Pass. But besides what Annie and I spoke of earlier, of being able to play your movie and TV library or your music library from wherever you are, one of the other really neat features of Plex is, like I said, you have access to broadcast television and some older movies and stuff that now Plex has licensing for, because they're trying to become a more feature-rich service. So you can watch some really amazing stuff. Right now, everything that used to be on Crackle is now happening on Plex, and it's for free. And we're talking some really good classic movies and shows, some really good Japanese anime that's all there. But the killer feature for me is I have automatic camera upload. And so because of the Plex Pass, and because years ago I got weird looks from my family members when I gave them Plex Passes for Christmas, and like, oh, you're going to really love it. And they're like, we're not nerds like you. We don't get it. But I have all of their phones. When they take pictures, it goes into the family library, and then they have their independent libraries with your password locked. You know, I don't want to see my brother-in-law's weird obtuse. So
you don't want to have to call anybody.
If something were to happen, like when my brother-in-law did something stupid, like drop his phone into a concrete and it ruined it. And he's like, oh, but I had all his pictures on there. I was like, well, didn't you have Android? Didn't you send it to, like, you know, Google? Oh, no, I don't trust Google. But I was like, oh, God, one of these guys. Okay, anyway, connect your phone back up, install the Plex, all the pictures there. And he goes, no, I never uploaded anything anywhere. You know, I don't like to do that kind of stuff. I go, yeah, but I did it for you. So all your grandbaby's pictures are there, Jack. Okay. And then so that premium photo upload thing that becomes part of your Plex Pass is another backup of your heirloom photos, because it just happens instantaneously. You take a photo, whether you know it or not, when you have it connected to Wi-Fi, it will automatically upload to the Plex server that you attached it to. And I mean, there's a lot more things that it can do, and I could do like an entire, like, three or four shows of the marvels of Plex. But that photo uploader thing is something that not a lot of Plex talkers talk about, and it is fantastical.
Absolutely.
I'll have to throw in one feature that will blow people's minds. you really can create your own private Netflix with or your own private private Spotify, because it's not just for like you and for people who are on the local network. You can actually just arbitrarily say your say to your friends, "Oh well, yeah, I recorded like every Red Sox game this year. If you want them, here's a password to my Plex server. You can set up an account for them, give them access to your Red Sox library or your entire movie library or your music library, and now they just have this access to your custom content." Last week the big addition was I bought a I realized that I didn't have any Don Knotts movies in my movie collection, so I bought this five movie Don Knotts collection. You're not going to find that, oddly enough, on Hulu or on Netflix, but my friends can now see The Reluctant Astronaut whenever they want because they're my friends and they have access to my Plex server.
Yeah, I can definitely second that. I think the other really cool feature of Plex Pass is the sync feature, like we just talked about. Yeah. I use that all the time, like when I'm traveling or whatever. Like I always have an iPad full of shows and movies and whatever.
You know, Andy, it's funny you say that. I actually have a buddy that set me up a Nissan link so that I can watch the Sox games on my. But it's not just the games itself. You know, the pre-shows, the after-shows, the stuff that I'm not going to be able to get here in Honolulu. So I have access to watch everything that NESN puts out about them, their Sox.
Yep.
Makes me happy. It's one of my favorite parts of my Plex. I'm like, oh, dude, I love you so.
Can we dip back into nostalgia for just another minute? That I guess we're probably all again we all have a lot of the same jobs. We're old enough to remember, like, okay, now I'm going to be in San Francisco for an entire week for Macworld Expo. I've got a DVD case that holds 20 discs, including CDs and DVDs. Which like 3 or 4 or 5 movies do I want to take with me? And then before I leave, like spending 45 minutes with my TiVo saying, okay, now don't automatically delete this. Record this, but make sure you don't delete this. And with Plex, I can leave for an entire month. And if I decide that, hey, remember that BBC documentary, the BBC competition series, the Great Pottery Throwdown from 3 years ago? I kind of feel like I want to see that. And suddenly you're in your hotel room watching judges cry over a really wonderfully made hand thrown toilet bowl, just on demand. God, again, that we're in some trying times, but on balance, we need to remember that the 21st century has many positive aspects.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, my cool thing, is a completely new show on Netflix. It's called Space Force. And if you've ever watched the American version of The Office, then you will probably know the people behind it because it's the same people. Steve Carell is back. With John Malkovich, Ben Schwartz, and it's literally what the title says. It's basically like 4-star general Steve Carell has to work with scientists and create this ominous space force that he now has to lead. And like, I mean, you can imagine, it is hilarious. I haven't seen it yet. I have like gobbled up all the trailers and everything, and I cannot, since I'm a big fan of The Office, I cannot wait for this show to start. It's on Netflix.
May 29th,
worldwide, as far as I know. So yeah, if you're interested in that, it just sounds hilarious. It's kind of The Office meets, I don't know, The Orville maybe. kind of somewhere in between, I would say. So definitely highly recommended. It's on Netflix. And I think with that, we're done for today. Thanks for being here, guys. Thanks for doing this, even with all the chaos and everything. Chuck, let us know where people can find you.
Sure. You can find everything I'm doing over at macvoices.com. We talk to a lot of interesting people about a lot of interesting things, and would love to have you there. And you can reach out to me on Twitter as @ChuckJoyner.
Thanks for that. And Mr. Natko, where can people find you?
If you spell my last name, IHNATKO, you can access to my Instagram and to my Twitter, where I usually post like where I'm streaming and where I'm doing writing things. My blog is anatko.com, but as for the past 3 or 4 years, it's been in a state of flux. It's mostly a demonstration of where my limits are as a web developer, because I keep telling myself, no, I'm not going to buy managed host. I'm not going to buy just a WordPress.com account where they run everything for me. I'm going to host my own server. And that's why my server doesn't have security and doesn't, it's terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the same way. Like, I'm like, I can run my own stuff. I'm not buying anything
from Zach. And the thing is, I got an email from a really, really nice listener to my Boston radio show. And so it warned me that you don't have HTTPS and reminded me that, oh man, that's right. I keep it up to date so that it's probably not going to be hacked anytime soon. But it's like, that was another thing that reminded me that, yeah, I should probably move it to WordPress.com because they would just put an S at the end of that really, really quickly. And they know what they're doing. Whereas I don't know how to center things in CSS. So.
You're still learning. Callum, where can people find you?
Yeah, so you can get hold of us at onthemax.com. Drop us an email at info@onthemax. We're on all the usual socials as well. You can get hold of me at O'Hara Callum on Twitter. If you've got any questions, reach out to any of us. I'm in the Slack room as well. So get in touch and we're happy to help.
Thank you. And last but not least, Doc. A good old friend.
You can find me all over the internet at DOCROCK. You can also find the same thing on the same YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/DocRock. I'm doing a lot of videos there, doing a lot more with the live streaming. And that the website is DocRock Tips. And also you can find me hopefully soon on the airplane somewhere when the lady asked me, would you like some coffee? Saying, lady, shh, be quiet. I'm listening to Dave O'Brien wax rhapsodically about them socks.
All right. You can find me, everything I do, on thepatrice.com. I'm usually on the Mac show and the Big Show. Big Show is at 8 p.m. UK time tonight, whatever that is in your time zone. You'll probably have to figure out yourself. It's 9 p.m. for me, for example, Central European time zone. I also have a new podcast that I launched a couple of weeks ago now. Called Foodie Flashback. We started with Doc Rock. I've had Jeff on. I'm definitely going to have Chuck and Andy on, and definitely also Callum. I do want to hear all those different stories from all over the world. I just released, I think the first episode is someone who is not a, like, neither foodie nor a podcaster at all, but is a listener of this very show, Tom Ferry. Which was really, really interesting just to listen to him. His wife actually learned something, which was like really hilarious. She was like, I didn't know that. And I'm like, see? And we talked for a good hour. So like, I mean, for someone who wasn't sure he had anything to talk about and wasn't a foodie, we for sure unearthed a lot of really interesting stories. So if you're interested in that, or if you want to be on the podcast, go head over to foodieflashback.com. Or just reach out to me and we'll set something up. And you can find all of us and this entire everything, the network, the show, at britishtechnetwork.com or at BritishTech on Twitter. And with that, thanks for listening. Talk to you later or next week.